Prologue. The object of her desire was walking down the opposite side of the sky lane, moving along a pedwalk so choked with vines and yorick coral that even the Zap gangs traveled single file. He was 2 levels below and 10 meters ahead, and he kept stopping to study door membranes and peer into the windows of coral-crusted buildings. Then he would just stand there in the gloom, alone and empty-handed, as though no Jedi need fear the dangers of the Undercity, as though he ruled the twilight depths down where Coruscant changed to Yuuzhan'tar. Jacen Solo was as arrogant as ever, and this time it would be his undoing. The angle was perfect, almost too perfect. If she struck now, he would be dead almost as soon as he hit the pedwalk. Even if corpse robbers did not drop the body into the sky lane, the only hint of what had killed him would be a tiny barb in his neck and a trace of venom in his nervous system. Nobody would know that his death had been an execution, not even Jacen. But Alima Rar needed them to know. She needed to see the shock of recognition in Jason's eyes when he collapsed, to feel his fear burning in the Force as his heart cramped into an unbeating knot. She needed to hold him dying in her arms and suck the last breath from his lips, to hear his father roaring curses and watch his mother wailing in grief. That last part Alima needed more than anything. She had spent years pondering what she could take from Leia Solo that would be the equal of everything Leia had taken from her. An instep and 5 toes, that would be a fair trade for the half of a foot Leia had cut off on Tanoop, and the princess's eyes and ears would do for the Leku she had severed aboard the Admiral Ackbar. But what of the giant spider sloth to which Leia had fed her in the Tanoopian jungle? How was Alima to match that? Because this was not about revenge, not about cruelty. It was about balance. The spider sloth had nearly killed her, had bitten her almost in half, and left her slender dancer's body roped with white scars, an ugly, lopsided thing that only a Rodian would desire. Now Alima had to take something equal from Leia, something that would shatter her to the core, because that's what Jedi did. They served the balance. And the first thing Alima wanted to take was Jacen, who was moving along the pedwalk toward the corner of an intersecting sky lane. She had wanted to take him for a long time, since the day he had returned so mysterious and powerful from his 5-year sojourn to study the Force. And now she would have him, perhaps not in the way she had once desired, but she would have him. Eager to keep her prey in sight, Alima hurried back toward the nearest pedestrian bridge. It was 50 meters away, but she could not risk foresleeping across the sky lane after Jacen rounded the corner. This region was teeming with ferals, the half-wild survivors of the Yuuzhan Vong invasion who continued to live a primitive existence deep in the Undercity. If they saw Alima do something that remarkable, Jacen would sense their shock. As Alima drew near the bridge, a faint nettling came to the stump of her amputated leku. She stopped and slipped as far into the shadows as the coral would allow, then stood motionless, listening to the ferals murmur behind their door membranes. When no danger appeared, she extended her Force awareness a few meters and felt a pair of nervous presences behind her. Alima turned to find the sunken-eyed faces of 2 young humans smirking up from the floor. They were hiding along the back of the pedwalk, in a shadowy stairwell so ringed with yorick coral that she had not noticed it. When they realized she was looking at them, the boys snickered and started to slip back down the stairwell. Alima caught them in the Force. They cried out in shock and grabbed at the wall, cutting their hands on the yoric coral as they tried to keep from being pulled back into view. With thin brows and small, round-ended noses, they were clearly brothers. She raised her lip in a twisted half-smile, enjoying the sense of power that rushed through her veins as their shock changed to fear.
"And what did you two have planned for us?"
Alima always referred to herself in the plural. It was a habit she had acquired when she became a Killick joiner, and one that she had no interest in losing. Using the singular would mean admitting that her nest was gone, that Jason and Luke and the rest of the Jedi had destroyed Gorig. And that was not true. Not while Alima still lived.
"Robbery? Murder? Ravagery?"
The brothers shook their heads and started to open their mouths, but were clearly too repulsed by her deformities to speak.
"You're staring."
Alima force-pinned them against the wall.
"That's rude."
"Put us down," the larger ordered.
With a lean face and a shadowy line of mustache fuzz on his upper lip, he was probably a year or two into human adolescence.
"We didn't mean nothing. It's just—"
His gaze slid from Alima's face toward the leku stump hanging behind her shoulder, then quickly began to drop. Alima had traded her provocative attire for more traditional Jedi garb. But even those shape-concealing robes were not enough to hide her disfigurements. The lopsided twist of her body, and the way one atrophied arm hung at her side. As the boy's gaze fell, she sensed in the Force his growing revulsion, actually experienced the disgust he felt when he looked at her.
"It's just what?" Alima demanded.
In her anger, she was pressing both boys against the wall so hard they began to wheeze.
"Go ahead. Tell us."
It was the younger brother who answered.
"It's just—"
He nodded at the lightsaber hanging from her belt.
"You're a Jedi."
Alima smiled coldly.
"Aren't you clever? Pretending you've never seen a Jedi Knight before."
She glanced 10 meters down the pedwalk, to where a knobby-scaled Rodank had backed a screeching Faleen into a tangle of slash vines, then looked back to the boy.
"But we have the Force. We know what you were looking at."
Allowing the older brother to fall free, she pointed down the pedwalk and force-hurled his younger sibling into the slash vines next to the Faleen. The startled Rodank reared back on its hind legs, front feet raised and claws unsheathed, then extended its thin proboscis and began to sniff the new prey. The boy whimpered and called for help. Alima looked back to the older one, who was already trying to inch his way toward his brother, and waved him on.
"Go."
She gave a cruel little laugh.
"After the Rodank is finished with you, you'll know how we feel."
The boy's eyes flashed with fear, but he pulled a shiv of sharpened durasteel from his sleeve and raced down the pedwalk to help his brother. Alima turned toward the bridge, and as the snarl and shriek of combat erupted behind her, allowed herself a small smile of satisfaction. The boys had mocked her disfigurement, and now they would be disfigured themselves. The balance had been preserved. She continued up the pedwalk, then started across the bridge. Her stump began to nettle again, and she wondered if someone was watching her. Jason had seemed to be alone when he left his apartment, but as commander of the Galactic Alliance Guard, he would know to expect assassins. Maybe his young apprentice, Ben Skywalker, had followed a few moments later to watch his back. Alima gently extended her Force awareness into the shadows behind her, searching for that flicker of pure, bright power that always betrayed the Force presence of earnest young Jedi Knights. She felt nothing, and decided that maybe the cause of her uneasiness was a raucous Zap gang ahead. They had claimed the middle of the bridge for their own, and were taking turns trying to push a frightened Gamorrean female over the safety rail.
As Alima approached, they spread across the bridge and leered at her twisted form. They were all young human males, all wearing white tabards over various pieces of plastoid armor.
"What do you think you are?"
the leader asked, eyeing Alima's black robes. He was a large youth, with a 3-day growth of beard and a badly swollen cheek.
"Some kind of Jedi?"
"We have no time for your games," Alima replied coolly. "Go back and play with your Gamorrean."
She made a shooing motion with the backs of her fingers, at the same time touching his mind through the Force.
"You might have more fun if you let her do the pushing."
Swollen Cheek frowned, then turned to his companions.
"She doesn't have time for us."
He started after the Gamorrean, who was lumbering toward the far end of the bridge as fast as her thick legs could take her.
"Get her! We'll try something new this time."
The Zap Gang spun as one and raced away. Alima followed, catching up as they surrounded the Gamorrean and began to argue about who would be shoved into the safety rail first. Alima slipped past and smiled to herself. Balance. At the other end of the bridge, Jason was nowhere to be seen. He had either rounded the corner of the building or entered a doorway while Alima was dealing with the city's riffraff. She drew her lightsaber and advanced up the pedwalk, half expecting to feel the emitter nozzle of a lightsaber pressing into her ribs just before Jason activated the blade. The most dangerous thing Alima met was a foraging scrap pack, which skittered away into a tangle of slash vines almost as soon as she saw it. The only other oddity was the sporadic stream of ferals disappearing through a door membrane near the corner of the building. They were of many species, Bith, Bothan, Ho-Din, and they were all bearing the carcasses of dead animals, including hawk bats, granite slugs, a few slimy yanskaks. Once there was even a Cheevan clutching what looked like a dead Ewok in its huge claw. They were probably just ferals returning home with the day's hunt, but as Alima passed in front of the doorway, she kept her lightsaber at the ready. No one leapt out to attack her, but she sensed a trio of Force presences on the other side of the membrane. Alima did not bother to investigate. Had it been Jason lurking behind the door, she would have sensed nothing at all. Instead, she exchanged her lightsaber for a short blowgun and armed it with a small cone dart from a sealed container in her utility belt. She had 8 more such darts, one for each of the Solos and the Skywalkers, plus 2 extras, all fashioned from the stinger and venom sac of a deadly Tanupian wasper. The poison was fairly quick, at least on human-sized creatures, but more important, it was certain. It co-opted the white blood cells sent to fight infection, turning them into tiny toxin-producing factories. Within moments of being struck, all of the victim's organs would fall under attack, and within moments of that, his vital systems would start to fail. Jason would live just long enough for Alima to reveal herself. He would probably die even before he realized that his Jedi poison-neutralizing techniques could not save him. Alima raised the blowgun to her lips and stepped around the corner, her body already purring with the sweet tingle of murder. But Jason seemed determined to disappoint her. The pedwalk was empty and dark, and there was not a sentient soul in sight. Thinking he had lured her into a trap after all, Alima whirled back around the corner, her lungs filled with the air that would send the lethal dart shooting into her ambusher. There was no ambush. That pedwalk was empty as well, and the only danger Alima sensed was the same faint tingle she had been feeling since before crossing the bridge. Could Jason Solo be hiding from her? Alima's anger welled up inside. It was those boys. They had made her hurt them, and Jason had always been so sensitive to such things. She cursed the brothers for making her lose control. Her plan had just grown more complicated. and that meant the pair would have to pay. But later. Right now, she needed to go after Jason. The poison on her dart would lose its effectiveness in less than an hour. Alima returned to the door she had just passed, the one all the ferals had been entering with their carcasses. Dark and ringed by a thick crust of yorick coral, it looked more like a cavern mouth than a doorway. She pressed a nerve bundle on the door jamb, and the membrane pulled aside. Standing opposite her was a brawny Nikto with a scaly green face and a ring of small horns encircling his eyes. He kept one hand in the pocket of his soiled jerkin, obviously holding a blaster, and Alima could sense two more guards beside him, hiding on either side of the door. He studied her for an instant, then rasped,
"Wrong door, lady. Nothing inside to interest you."
Alima started to reach for the guard in the force, but stopped when her danger sense grew so strong that her remaining leku began to tingle as well. She pointed her blowgun at the Nikto's feet and, using a force suggestion to ensure he would obey, commanded,
"Wait."
The expression in the Nikto's eyes changed from threatening to surprised to obedient, and Alima extended her force awareness in all directions. To her astonishment, she brushed a cold presence, something dark and bitter, back up the pedwalk near the bridge. But when she turned to look in that direction, all she saw was the Zap Gang cheering on the Gamorrean as she belly-bounced their leader into the safety railing. And the presence did not belong to any of the Zappers. It was much too strong in the force, too focused. Then the darkness vanished, and the danger tingle in her leku subsided as quickly as it had come. Alima continued to study the pedwalk for a few moments, trying to digest what she had felt. Someone was definitely stalking her, but it could hardly be Jason. Even if he had been careless enough to let her detect him, and he wouldn't have been, the Jason she remembered was anything but bitter, solemn and brooding, certainly, but also devoted and sincere. So who was stalking her? Not Ben. He was too young to be so bitter. And not Jaina. Her temperament was too fiery to feel so cold. Besides, the presence had felt dark. And it made no sense for a darksider to be watching Jason's back. It had to be something else. Another possibility dawned on her. Maybe Alima was not the one being followed. Maybe it was Jason. Could someone be trying to steal her kill? Alima turned back to the Nikto, gesturing past him with her blowgun.
Did Jason Solo go in there?
Jason Solo?
The Nikto shook his head.
Don't know any Solos.
Come now.
Alima used the force to draw the Nikto out onto the pedwalk.
The news hollows reach even down here, and every third report contains his image. The commander of the Galactic Alliance Guard, the savior of Coruscant.
Why would someone like that come here?
The Nikto tried to sound uncertain, but Alima could sense his lie in the subtle tremor of his force presence.
There's nothing inside but housing.
You dare lie to me?
Alima used the force to raise her crippled arm, then grabbed him by the throat.
To a Jedi?
Still calling on the force, she lifted him off his feet and squeezed until she heard the happy crackle of crushed cartilage. The Nikto's mouth fell open, and a terrible gurgle came from his throat. Alima continued to hold him aloft until his eyes rolled back and his feet began kicking. Only when she sensed the other two guards stepping into the doorway did she drop the Nikto on the balcony and turn to find a pair of tentacle-faced Quarren bringing their old E-11 blaster rifles to bear. Alima waved her blowgun, using the force to turn their weapons aside,
then touched their minds with hers to search out the doubt she knew would be foremost in their thoughts, the fear that they could not stop her from entering, that they would be the ones who died.
You do not need to die.
Alima spoke in a force whisper so soft and compelling that it sounded like a thought.
You do not need to stop anyone.
The guards relaxed. Alima stepped over the dying Nikto and went through the doorway.
No one is coming through the door, she purred.
As Alima passed between the quorum, she noticed that one of them had only 3 face tentacles. Their beady eyes began to focus on her, and their old E-11 blaster rifles started to swing back toward her.
You do not need to die.
Alima tapped the muzzles of their weapons aside.
You do not need to see me.
Their eyes grew unfocused again, and they turned their attention back to the door. Once Alima was safely inside, she faced the 2 Quarren.
You know me well,
she said, continuing to speak in her force whisper.
We have been talking for several minutes.
The Quarren shifted their stances, opening a place for Alima, and turned their heads slightly toward her. Now Alima spoke in her normal voice.
Where do you suppose he was going?
3 Tentacle turned to face her.
Who? Solo?
Alima nodded.
Where do you think he was going?
3 Tentacle retorted.
To see it, of course.
It?
Alima had spent enough of her life wallowing in the underbelly of the galaxy to know that illicit enterprises were often referred to only in vague terms. Did Jason have a secret vice, an addiction he was hiding, or a compulsion he had picked up in captivity and been unable to shake? She looked back to the Quarren.
What are we talking about? Spice dens? Death games?
Now the second Quarren turned toward her, his tentacles straightening in his species equivalent of a frown.
Is that supposed to be a joke? He's here for the same reason everyone is. To see it. The friend.
The friend. Of course.
Alima knew the kind of friends males kept hidden in places like this, the kind they would dare visit only in the anonymous depths of an undercity. Jason's time with the Yuuzhan Vong must have left him more bent than even she had realized. She pointed her blowgun out the door, gesturing at the fallen Nikto, then spoke in her force whisper again.
Your companion was attacked by an intruder,
she said.
You saw the intruder kill him, and soon the intruder will want to come inside.
To kill it?
The second Quarren gasped.
Yes, to kill it,
Alima agreed.
You must stop the intruder from entering.
3 Tentacle pressed a nerve bundle, closing the door. Then both Quarren pointed their blaster rifles at the heart of the membrane.
Good,
Alima said. She turned away from the door, confident the 2 Quarren had already forgotten her. During her time with the Kilix, the queen of her nest, a dark Jedi named Lomi Plo, had helped her develop a slippery presence in the Force. Now, as soon as Alima vanished from someone's sight, she also vanished from memory. Alima left the vestibule and entered a warren of winding, tunnel-like passages lit by the bioluminescent lichen typical of Yuuzhan Vong converted buildings. She selected the largest, most heavily trodden corridor and started forward at a brisk pace. She had to work fast if she wanted to be the one who killed Jason. Whoever was behind her would not be delayed for long by the Quarren. The air quickly grew hot and dank, and puffs of what smelled like ammonia and sulfur started to roll up the passage. Alima wrinkled her nose
and began to wonder just what kind of pleasure den this was. No spice she had ever used was so harsh.
If the odor grew any stronger, it would be foul enough to quell a rancor in Rut.
She had just reached a short side passage when the distant shriek of blaster rifles sang down the corridor, the vestibule guards opening fire on her mysterious stalker. Alima peered down the side passage and saw that it opened into something vaguely reminiscent of a Kalaun joy cave, a central chamber surrounded by a number of privacy cells. Was that where she would find Jason and his friend? A strange chorus of snap hisses erupted from the entry vestibule, and the blaster fire ceased as suddenly as it had begun. By the sound of it, whoever was following Alima was using some sort of strange lightsaber technology, and using it well. The Quarren had bought Alima even less time than she had expected. But which way had Jason gone? Into the Joy Cave, or deeper into the building? Searching for him in the Force would do no good, indeed would probably prove disastrous. Even if he wasn't concealing his own presence, he would feel her looking for him, and Alima could not best Jason solo in a straight duel, not with one half-useless arm and one clumsy half-foot. Fortunately, Alima knew males, and males, especially important males who pursued their secret passions in low places, did not like to wait for their pleasure. She went down the side passage and was surprised to find no panderer there to greet her, nor any spice dealers, nor any glitter girls waiting for new clients. There wasn't even a beverage center, only a fountain gurgling in the center of the room and a refresher tucked away into a rear alcove. The doors to most of the privacy cells were open, revealing small dens containing beds, nesting basins, or simple raised pallets. But a handful of the cells were closed, and Alima could sense beings in them all. She went to the first, and holding her blowgun ready to shoot, pressed the nerve bundle beside the door. The membrane retracted to reveal a pair of genet curled up on large floor cushions, their limbs pulled in tight, and their snouts tucked close to their legs. Neither opened an eye, even when Alima grunted in disbelief. There were no spice pipes in the cell, no aphrodisiacs, not even an empty ale mug. They were sleeping, just sleeping. Alima moved on, opening two more doors. She found a lone Duros behind one, and a trio of Chadrafan behind the other, all sleeping. Apparently she had stumbled into some sort of staff dormitory. She cursed under her breath. What kind of pleasure den had its staff quarters in front? Alima started back toward the main corridor, and glimpsed her pursuer's shadow on the far wall. She ducked out of sight, and made sure that her Force presence was damped down, then peered around the corner and watched as a thin woman in a scarlet robe came down the corridor. The woman was middle-aged, with red hair and a thin nose, and she kept the lower half of her face concealed behind a black scarf. In one hand she held a coil of strands, leather and gem-studded metal, attached to what looked like the hilt of a lightsaber. Alima was so shocked that she almost let her feelings spill into the Force. At the Jedi Academy on Yavin 4, she had studied the story of an Imperial agent named Shira Bree. How Bree had attempted to discredit Luke in the eyes of his fellow pilots, only to be shot down and nearly killed. How Darth Vader had rehabilitated her, turning her into as much a machine as he was, then training her in the ways of the Sith. How she had constructed her light whip and returned to trouble Luke Skywalker time after time in her new identity as Lumia, Dark Lady of the Sith. Could it be that Lumia had returned once more? Alima saw no room to doubt. The woman was the right age and appearance. She concealed her lower face beneath the same dark scarf that Lumia wore to hide her scarred jawline, and she carried a light whip, a weapon unique
in the era of modern Jedi. And she was hunting Jason Solo. Alima drew back around the corner, her thoughts whirling as she struggled to sort through the implications. She knew from the histories she had studied that Lumia hated the Skywalkers and Solos almost as much as Alima herself did. So it seemed likely their goals were the same, to destroy the Solo Skywalker clan. But Alima could not permit Lumia to steal her kills. If the balance was to be served, Alima had to destroy the prey herself. She filled her lungs with air, then raised the blowgun to her lips and spun around the corner to attack. The corridor was empty. She stepped back around the corner, expecting Lumia to attack from the cover of a force blur or drop off the ceiling at any instant. When nothing happened, Alima stood and stepped away from the door. Still, Lumia did not appear. Alima expanded her force awareness, searching for the Sith's dark presence. Nothing. She cautiously peered around the corner again. When no attack came, she studied the walls, ceiling, and floor carefully, searching for any odd shadows or blurred areas where Lumia might be hiding. When there was still no attack, she advanced up the short side passage to the main corridor and did the same thing. Lumia was gone, vanished as quickly as she had appeared. Alima grew cold and empty inside, and she began to wonder if she had really seen Lumia at all. Maybe it had been a force vision, or maybe her fever had returned. Once, near the end of her first year marooned in the Tanupian jungle, she had spent days exploring the Masasi temples on Yavin 4 with her dead sister Numa, only to find herself stranded high on a Tanupian mountain when the fever finally broke. But another explanation seemed just as likely. Lumia had continued after Jason. Alima started down the corridor at a run, growing more worried with each step that Lumia would beat her to the kill, no longer taking the time to move quietly, barely paying attention to which way she was going, just moving deeper into the building, deeper into the heat and the dankness and that horrid smell of ammonia and sulfur. Twice she ran headlong into surprised ferals, and twice she had to kill them for attempting to lie to her before finally pointing the true way to it. Another time, she heard a large group of armored ferals clattering up a ramp she was descending. She pressed herself against the wall between two patches of glow lichen, then drew a force shadow over herself and watched impatiently as they rushed past to search out the intruder. Finally, the ammonia and sulfur smell grew almost overpowering, and Alima began to hear strange gurglings and splashes. She emerged onto a narrow mezzanine balcony and found herself gazing across a huge well of yellow fog. It looked nothing like the pleasure den she had been expecting, but she stepped out of the passage and crossed the balcony without hesitation. In typical Yuuzhan Vong fashion, there was no railing to keep pedestrians safe. The Yorick coral floor simply ended 20 meters above a vast pool of steaming slime. A constant supply of bubbles was rising from the depths of the pool, speckling the surface with flashes of light as they burst into scarlet and yellow glimmers. The surrounding walls were mottled with patches of bioluminescent lichen, barely visible through the thick fog. Higher up, several tiers of balconies curved away on both sides and vanished into the steam. Scattered along the balcony edges were the shadowy silhouettes of ferals, usually in the process of tossing animal carcasses or even lifeless bipeds into the pool below. The splashes were always followed by a short gurgle, as though the bodies were too heavy to float on slime. Alima furrowed her brow, trying to decide exactly what she was looking at. In Coruscant's savage undercity, especially the part that was still Yuuzhan Tarr, dead animals were invariably devoured by ferals or other scavengers long before the meat spoiled. So it seemed unlikely the pool was some sort of garbage pit. Instead, the ferals had to be feeding something. something that Jason was interested in as well. Halima was about to back away when a voice murmured up through the fog. It was impossible to make out what it was saying over the gurgling of the pool, but Halima didn't care. She recognized that voice, its dark timbre, its careful rhythms, and, unmistakably, its patronizing inflections. Jason. Halima focused all her attention on that voice, trying to pinpoint its source. The fog and the pool worked against her, muffling Jason's words and drowning them out with gurgles. But eventually she grew attuned enough that she shut out everything else and began to understand what he was saying.
"Let me worry about Remwa and the Bothans." Jason sounded irritated. "Leaving the well was foolish. I can't protect you here."
The only response Halima heard was a long, liquid purl. But Jason responded as though he had been spoken to.
"That's ridiculous. I'd know if I had been followed. Not even Bothan assassins are that good."
Ever so carefully, Halima used the Force to clear the fog between herself and Jason. She was running the risk that Jason would feel her drawing on the Force, but she would have only one shot, and she needed to see her target. Besides, Jason was likely too preoccupied with his conversation to notice such a subtle disturbance. After another long purl, Jason's voice grew concerned.
"Inside the building? You're sure?"
There was a short gurgle.
"Of course I'd care,"
Jason replied testily. He snapped his lightsaber off his belt.
"You're the guard's most valuable asset. Without you, we couldn't track a tenth of the terrorist cells we do now."
The fog cleared, and Halima was astonished to see Jason addressing a fleshy black monstrosity that had come up from the slime. The thing was so large she could not even tell how much of it she was seeing. Its eye had a pupil the size of a Sullustan's head. Its tentacles were as big around as Halima herself, and, like everything in this part of the Undercity, its appearance was distinctly Yuuzhan Vong. The creature blinked and thrashed its tentacles across the surface.
"I can't ban Bothans from the planet," Jason replied. "That would push Bethawi straight into Corellia's camp."
Halima began to suspect what this creature was. While Jason had been held captive by the Yuuzhan Vong, he had supposedly struck up a friendship with the World Brain, a sort of genetic master controller whom the invaders had created to oversee the remaking of Coruscant. Before escaping, Jason had persuaded it to thwart its master's plans, to cooperate only partially in their efforts to reshape Coruscant. Later, during the final days of the war, he had convinced his friend to switch sides and help the Galactic Alliance retake the planet. Now he was using it to spy on Corellian terrorists. Clever boy. Halima raised the blowgun to her lips, and, using the Force to hide the cone dart, expelled her breath. The dart had just left the blowgun when, somewhere above Halima and to her right, a throaty female voice cried out,
"Jason!"
Jason spun, igniting his lightsaber as he turned. But the dart was tiny, swift, and still hidden in the Force, and Halima realized with a bolt of satisfaction that his blade was not rising to block. Then Jason cried out and flew backward, as though hurled by an invisible hand, and the dart flashed past, eliciting a liquid roar of pain as it disappeared into the enormous eye of the World Brain. Halima was astonished, dismayed, angry. But she was not stunned. She had been in too many death fights to let herself be paralyzed by any surprise. She pivoted toward the voice that had alerted Jason. 5 meters across the well's edge, and 1 balcony up, stood the fog-blurred silhouette of a thin woman in a scarlet robe. Her arm was still extended toward the slime pool, leaving no doubt that she had been the one who force-hurled Jason to safety. Lumia. As Alima backed away from the balcony's edge, Lumia pointed toward her.
There, Jason!
Alima turned to run, but the fog suddenly flashed blue, and a tremendous crack sounded from behind her. In the next moment, she found herself sliding across the floor, snakes of force lightning dancing across her anguished body until she finally passed from her attacker's sight. Alima did not understand what had just happened. Had Lumia really warned Jason? Had he been the one who hurled the force lightning at her? But there was no time to figure it out. She forced her cramped muscles to drag her into the nearest corridor, then rose to a knee and drew a force shadow over herself. She reached into her pocket for another dart, and that was when she realized the force lightning had made her drop her blowgun. Jason alit on the edge of the balcony, so obscured by yellow fog that he was barely more than a silhouette. But he was burning with a rage that Alima had not thought possible for him, an anger so fierce that it warmed the force like fire. He ignited his lightsaber, casting a green reflection that made his eyes shine with murderous intent. His gaze fell on the blowgun, and he started forward. An ear-piercing screech rang out from the well of the world brain. Then a dozen black tentacles rose out of the fog. They began to thrash about wildly, gashing themselves on the balcony and spraying the walls with blood. Jason's eyes darkened to the color of black holes, and he started forward, his gaze shifting to the corridor where Alima was hiding. Though Alima knew she lacked the power to kill Jason with one attack, and that she would not have time for two, she opened herself to the force, preparing to blast him with lightning. Then a second silhouette, this one a slender woman with a veiled face, dropped out of the fog, landing on the edge of the balcony and dancing past the thrashing tentacles as only someone trained in force acrobatics could. Alima extended her hand. Lumia was not going to steal her kill. But instead of attacking Jason, Lumia merely caught him by the arm and spun him toward the thrashing tentacles.
"Jason, those are convulsions," she said. "We have to slow the poison now, or your spy is dead."
Alima's jaw dropped. Lumia's tone was one of command, a master to a student. "But the assassin..."
"Would you rather have vengeance or preserve an intelligence asset?"
"This isn't about vengeance." Jason looked toward the corridor where Alima was hiding. "It's about justice. We can't let the assassin..."
"The assassin is only the tool," Lumia interrupted again. "It's the hand wielding her we need to stop. It's Remwa and his lieutenants."
Jason continued to stare at Alima's corridor, his fury and desire to kill pouring into the force. Lumia released Jason's arm, pulling her hand away in disgust.
"I can see it was a mistake to pick you. Go on."
She waved him toward Alima's hiding place.
"You are a servant to your emotions, not a master to them."
"This has nothing to do with my emotions."
"It has everything to do with your emotions," Lumia countered. "You're angry because your friend was hurt, and now you can think of nothing but bringing the attacker to justice. You're hopeless."
Lumia's last comment seemed to sting Jason. He continued to glare into the corridor for a moment, then glanced away long enough to summon her blowgun. "Tell Remwa we're coming," he said, pointing the blowgun in Alima's general direction. "This won't go unanswered." Jason turned away. He and Lumia danced past the thrashing tentacles of the world brain and dropped into the fog. Even after they were gone,
Alima remained in hiding, too shocked to move. Jason Solo, apprenticing with a Sith. Had the galaxy gone mad?